Today on JSecio Live, newly declassified documents prove that all along, the Russia investigation was a total hoax.
Live from Washington, D.C., JSecio Live.
The walls are closing in. People are beginning to talk. Remember in the affidavit, somebody told the court the subsource, the Russian guy, was truthful and cooperative. Nothing could have been more untrue than that.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
He was truthful, but he destroyed the reliability of the dossier. They misled the court. If you can find the person who said that, you're off to the races.
And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Holding in my hand right now, for those watching on Facebook and Periscope, this is the declassified Department of Justice document on the Office of Legislative Affairs to Senator Lindsey Graham, chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, to Dianne Feinstein, Mark Warner, Marco Rubio as well. And within, we talked about a little bit yesterday. My dad is joining us as well today on the broadcast, JSecio, to break this down too, because it is shedding so much light on how from the very start of this Russia hoax, witch hunt is even like maybe too strong of a term, because it implies that there's something going on. This was just made up, hearsay, things I overheard. Those are direct quotes from the main source Christopher Steele used. I never thought it would be used in any kind of report. It should all be taken with a grain of salt. Oh, and by the way, Peter Strzok saying a month after interviewing that source in February 2017, I don't think we can trust Christopher Steele's sourcing. Now, they call this the subsources, but Christopher Steele, these are the architects. Christopher Steele couldn't have just written the dossier without having some sourcing to at least make it try to look legitimate. So all of his sources, including his main source, who had six subsources, many with links to Russian intelligence, all turn out to be bogus lies.
Look, it's a case that was based on bogus lies. It was fraudulent from the start. The FBI knew it was fraudulent from the start. They allowed it to go forward with one intention: to take down the sitting president of the United States. The problem that they ran into, of course, was that we put on a real defense and we held the government accountable. But when you start getting this information as it's being declassified, Jordan, I mean, it's breathtaking. The idea that they knew this from the beginning, that the Steele dossier, the document that James Comey briefed the then president-elect, President Trump, on January 8th in Trump Tower, briefed him on this. They knew the sources were not only unreliable, but should not even be used. The FBI knew that. And they did it and proceeded with Crossfire Hurricane anyways.
What is so upsetting to me, Dad, and I don't want to go back to you on this, is that we have people like Adam Schiff saying, you know, if President Trump is reelected, they're going right back to impeachment, basically. And it's all based off this idea. They still, document after document, acquittal at impeachment trial, no facts, the dossier totally disproven. Ukraine, no one believes that was anything impeachable or something wrong with that phone call that 35 other people were listening to with the president of the United States and the newly elected president of Ukraine. But yet Adam Schiff and Democrats, if President Trump is reelected and the Democrats retain control of the House, they want to come right back at this. They will not let this go.
You know, think about that for a moment. They're going to bring an impeachment proceeding on something they've already bought, or try to bring an impeachment proceeding on. They had a special counsel, an impeachment proceeding. They rushed up to the Supreme Court to demand documents. The Supreme Court said they don't get them. And now, if the president is reelected, which I believe he will be, they're already saying even though he'll be reelected by the American people, we're still going to bring an impeachment proceeding. That tells you what this is really about. It was a fraud in the beginning to get rid of the president. They were unsuccessful. They're going to continue to try.
I mean, look at this. This was from January 2017, right when the dossier, you know, comes out. Washington Post, New York Times. Trump campaign aides had repeated contacts with Russian intelligence. That's the headline as fact from the New York Times. Repeated. Folks, go to ACLJ.org. Support our work. Matching challenge. Whatever you donate this month, you double your impact. ACLJ.org. We'll be right back.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
This is coming out of the document released from Senator Lindsey Graham, the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee and the Senate Judiciary Committee in total. In a second document released, it contains Peter Strzok's written comments disagreeing with assertions made in a New York Times article, the one I just talked about alleged Russian intelligence ties to the Trump campaign. So Peter Strzok disagreed with the article I was just talking about that had the headline, Trump campaign aides had repeated contacts with Russian intelligence, stated as fact in the New York Times in 2017. Well, Peter Strzok had comments disagreeing with that. The document demonstrates that Peter Strzok, and this is the document that was newly unclassified, and others in FBI leadership positions must have been aware of the issues with the Steele dossier that the FBI's interview with Steele's primary subsource revealed, because Strzok commented that, quote, recent interviews and investigation, however, reveal Steele may not be in a position to judge the reliability of his subsource network. I mean, that is, again, the statement of the year, if you will, Dad.
Statement of the year, but yet they go and they get FISA warrants based on it.
Yep.
I mean, think about that. They got turned down for the FISA warrants the first couple of times. They add the Steele dossier fraudulent statements, which we now know were not true, which, of course, we always knew were not true. And they based that and got a FISA warrant, actually four FISA warrants. So think about that for a moment, that the Federal Bureau of Investigation, knowing the information contained in the Steele dossier, was in fact not actually accurate, but also based on sources that could not be confirmed on any count. One of them, by the way, is an anonymous that Steele supposedly doesn't know. It was somebody he talked to for 30 minutes. And yet they take that as the basis upon which to get a FISA warrant on Carter Page, four of them actually, to spy on the Trump campaign. Then they know this is all fake, and they continue to bring it. Now, there is investigations going on right now into all of that, and I know we've got a call on that. We should probably take it, because I want to explain to people what that investigation looks like.
Yeah, let's go to Carol in California on line one, and if you want to talk to us on air, we are live taking your calls, 1-800-684-3110, with your calls, comments, questions, 1-800-684-3110. Carol, welcome to JSecio Live.
Hi, Carol.
Thank you. My question is very simple. When are we to expect the Durham report to come out, and what will shed light differently on what you're talking about this morning if we get that?
Well, of course, John Durham is a U.S. attorney. He's been appointed by the Attorney General Bill Barr to conduct a top-to-bottom investigation on the entire Russia investigation as it relates to the, I would call it attack on the Trump campaign, but the surveillance of the Trump campaign. I don't think, I don't know this for sure, but I do not think it's going to look like the Mueller report, where it's a bunch of conclusion, where non-conclusions with, you know, inferences on facts or maybe not facts, and we can't make a decision. I actually think it's going to come down more as a, here's the action items we're taking, which I would not be surprised. I don't know this. That's obviously not information that I have. But I suspect people are going to be held accountable. How are they held accountable? Indicted. So I think that the report may actually be the indictments that may issue. Again, I don't have firsthand knowledge of that. But that is what I'm expecting, that kind of action from John Durham, who's in, like a special counsel in one sense. But he's a U.S. attorney charged with investigating this. I don't expect a three-volume report. And maybe he is. Maybe that goes to the attorney general. I don't know. But I know this. I'm expecting that there's going to be legal liability and culpability that reaches pretty high up in the FBI. How high? John Durham knows. I'm sure Bill Barr probably knows by now. But that... I expect that to be pretty big news pretty soon.
I want to go to Than Bennett in Washington, D.C., because, Than, you've got the Durham report going on, but you also have the investigation and the subpoena power of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Lindsey Graham. They've already had before them, remember, Rod Rosenstein back in June 3rd. Now, Sally Yates is set to testify, the deputy attorney general who was in the room with the Flynn conversation with President Trump and Vice President Biden. Now he's a candidate for President of the United States, and Jim Comey and Peter Strzok. Well, Sally Yates, the deputy AG and for a short time acting attorney general, she's set to testify under oath at the Senate Judiciary Committee August 5th. And Senator Graham, chairman of the committee, announced that he wants to get both McCabe, Andrew McCabe, and Clapper in September.
Yeah, and this is how this process usually works, Jordan, as you well know. Rod Rosenstein's testimony was on June 3rd, and from that point, Chairman Graham said that he was going to use the 53 subpoenas that he had the power to issue because the committee granted it to him to try to get voluntary appearances from some of these other people on the witness list, as well as, by the way, documents, Jordan. So the two documents that you're talking about today, I really think came about as a direct result from those subpoena threats. But you're right, on August 5th, Sally Yates is going to testify in public, by the way, so you'll be able to hear that testimony. It won't be behind closed doors. It'll be a public hearing. And then in September, I think you're going to hear from Andrew McCabe, James Clapper, and maybe even Jim Comey. So look, there's a public side to this. There's a private side to this. But the August 5th hearing, Jordan, look out for that one, because Sally Yates was one of the very few people inside that room where President Obama and Vice President Biden proved that they knew an awful lot about this and really gave a tacit go-ahead that it continued.
So you have, Dad, we're going to get the acting director, former director of the FBI, the deputy director of the FBI, the insurance policy who was directly overseeing Strzok and Lisa Page and Crossfire Razor and Crossfire Hurricane. And we're going to get to hear from Jim Clapper as well. But first, Sally Yates, your thoughts.
Yeah. I'm not so sure any of them are actually going to show up and testify. Maybe they will. Maybe they exercise privileges. I don't know. If I was their lawyer, I'd be cautious, to say the least. But you got to also go back and look at these information that Rick Grenell, when he was the acting DNI, declassified. You look at the statements that were made, and there's one in the notes of Peter Strzok. It says, we've not seen any evidence of individuals affiliated with the Trump team in contact with intelligence officials. We are unaware of any Trump advisor engaging in conversations with Russian intelligence officials. They knew all of this. And despite knowing all of this, they concocted and continued this investigation, which ends up with the appointment of Robert Mueller. Let's not forget that the auspices, the beginning, the foundation of Bob Mueller's appointment is this probe. And they knew there was nothing there. So this was a setup from the beginning.
You know, let's listen to this. The chief of staff to President Trump, Mark Meadows, a good friend of ours, former congressman from North Carolina, now chief of staff for President Trump. He's just talking to Maria Bartiromo this morning on Fox News. Take a listen, Bite 10.
It's just unbelievable that for 3 years this president was investigated and investigated again over something that wasn't even true, and the entire country was up in arms about collusion. I mean, you know, I don't hear anything on the other side of the aisle about this wrongdoing. which is just stunning to me.
Well, it is stunning. And here's the interesting thing is, it's not only that it wasn't true. The problem is they knew it wasn't true. And when you know something is not true and you continue the investigation, that's collusion. That's the kind of thing that we must stop. And that's what we where we need to hold people accountable.
You know, Dan, I am reading now. I want to read this from this New York Times article because this was the one that started out with the headline, stated as fact that the Trump campaign aides had repeated contacts with Russian intelligence. It said this in the New York Times. The officials said the intercepted communications were not limited to Trump campaign officials and included other associates of Mr. Trump. On the Russian side, the contacts also include members of the Russian government outside of the intelligence services, the officials said. All of the current and former officials spoke on the condition of anonymity because the continuing investigation is classified. That was February 2017. We now have Peter Strzok's note directly responding to this New York Times article because of what the Senate Judiciary Committee has declassified. And the Strzok note says, we do not know, nor can we figure out what this means or where it might be coming from, i.e. something we can actually identify as a source of misunderstanding.
Well, look, here's what it all shows. It shows that the intelligence officials knew that there was nothing there early on in the investigation. Yet what did they do? They persisted. They persisted in doing what? To set up individual witnesses with perjury. Remember what these individuals that were convicted of. False statements during their interview with the FBI. That was General Flynn's, which now, of course, the Department of Justice said should never have been brought in the first place. And we just have a judge who will not stop and do what the law requires. That's number one. Number two, that you look at George Papadopoulos, false statement to the FBI. Where's the allegation of misdeeds with regard to Russia or anyone else? There aren't any. Even Bob Mueller finds that out. So we've spent all these years, this president's been under all this scrutiny, and what is the end result of that? They had nothing in the beginning. They still have nothing. And yet, as you said earlier, Jordan, they're talking about, hey, maybe we could still impeach the president if he wins re-election. That's what they're worried about now.
Folks, we come back. We will continue to take your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. FBI agents became opportunists to try and take down the president, and they used the fake news media lies to build their case. Remember, we have a petition to take down the deep state at ACLJ.org. We're continually working on that. This is a great month to support financially, if you can, the work of the ACLJ. You have over 1,000 of those contacts that have come in, individuals and parents that need representation for these upcoming school issues that they're facing that we're doing at no cost to them because of your financial support. Donate online today at ACLJ.org.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We are taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. I do want to update you as well. We have reached well over 1,000 individuals, parents, or legal guardians of children who believe they are going to be facing significant hardships because of the upcoming school year or lack of school year, because of either plans that have been announced, virtual learning that has been kind of announced. There's also a lot of issues. Dad, we talked about this yesterday, which was, it's really kind of upsetting to me because, you know, who we're hearing from the most, I'd say, and by the way, out of those 1,000, already about 200 have been actively assigned, not just back and forth communication with an attorney, but they have attorneys now working with them on how to move forward in their specific situation. So we're moving very quickly. But, Dad, when I go through these and I see some of the ones that stand out to me as most egregious, and by the way, a lot of these are ones that are protected by federal law, are those who have disabilities. You know, we had a caller call in whose daughter was blind, but she had been going to school. She had excellent grades and would be a junior in high school. And they said the only option for her would be to have to go to a kind of like a boarding school for the blind for trade school this upcoming year. This was her daughter who was planning to go on to a four-year regular liberal arts university. So, of course, they've contacted us. So many with learning disabilities, so many who are economically hurting the most right now in the country, in the toughest zip codes. And yet, Dad, that's who our government is charged, especially during a time of pandemic.
Yeah.
Our local government is charged to protect those. I mean, we have the federal law to protect the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. So we could go into federal court on that one, on those kind of issues when you've got those disabilities. But also seeing so many of these contacts come in of people who just don't have the resources. I mean, it's great that we can represent them at no cost to them because they would never be able to afford an attorney and their kids would totally be left behind.
Look, here's the key part of this. There are ways in which departments of education at the state level and certainly the local school boards can make accommodation. It's a reallocation of resources. If you're not using filing lawsuits to demand that a school open up when they decide they don't want to open up. That's not us. I don't know who's bringing that, but we're not bringing that lawsuit. Our lawsuits, if they go to lawsuits, and our negotiations with school boards are to make reasonable accommodations to parents to impact and help their students. You just gave the example of the blind student. That's the perfect example where the school district could say, you know what, the virtual learning thing may not work, or whatever resources we have may not work. Why don't we allocate a certain percentage or provide some other type of resources, paying for tutors, whatever it might be. The average in most counties is about $15,000 to $18,000 in taxes per student. If you're not going to be able to operate the schools in a way that you had previously done, and you're not going to then meet the needs. And as Jordan said, there's federal law that specifically protects, especially students with disabilities. That's who we need to be helping right now. So like you, Jordan said, we've received, I think, over 1,000 requests for assistance, I think 32, maybe 40 states. And we're going through them one by one. And as Jordan said, we're assigning some cases, there's nothing you can do. That's just the way it is. A lot of cases, though, you can offer help. And you certainly can start negotiations in good faith with school boards to meet the needs of these students. That's what this is all about.
And that is starting to begin now. If you feel like you're in that situation, you go to aclj.org/help. And what do I mean when I say you're in that situation? That you will be facing substantial hardship because of what your school district has announced their plans, or maybe they haven't announced plans at all. It could be because of childcare needs. It could be because you're a single parent. It could be because of virtual learning. It could be because of when we talk about disabilities, we're not only talking about physical disabilities, but learning disabilities as well. So if you need that assistance, you go to aclj.org/help right now, fill out that form, and you'll be contacted by an ACLJ attorney. And remember, this is all done at no cost. And Dad, it's done at no cost because we've got great donors at the ACLJ who fund the ACLJ, donate to the ACLJ so that we can take on all these cases, so that we can sue the state of California when they try to tell churches who are still allowed to operate in person in their facilities exactly how they can operate, how they can worship. Can they sing or not sing? We can do all this because of the donors.
Yeah, it's a complete ban on singing or chanting under any circumstance. I mean, think about what's going on in some of the city streets right now, which I think is protected speech, by the way. I think they're allowed to do it as long as it's not violent. But they could chant, sing, and hold up signs and protest. That's protected under the First Amendment. But so is the church's ability to engage in worship. Even here, you could, like I said, we're not even challenging the 100 cap on people in attendance. You could have a 5,000-seat church worship facility and have 100 people there. They would be able to socially distance. Yet the state of California passes these broad bans, these prohibitions. And that, you know what, it ties into all these other cases we're doing. It's not, when we're in a situation like we are with the pandemic, it's not one size fits all. What works in Florida doesn't work in Georgia. What works in Georgia may not work in Tennessee. What works in Tennessee may not work in Washington, D.C. So we've got to be able to negotiate and work with school boards so that the needs of the student, that's the paramount concern for the ACLJ, that the need of the student is met. That's the key.
All right, folks, we're taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110, but I encourage you, if you can support the work of the ACLJ, we have a matching challenge in the month of July. It's a very important month for the ACLJ, if you're financially able to. I know a lot of people are hurting right now, but if you're not, and you're in a good financial position, this is a great time to donate because you double the impact of your donation. That's at aclj.org. Donate today. That's aclj.org. Let's go to the phones. Lori in Indiana online too. Lori, welcome to Jay Secchio Live.
Hi, guys.
Hey, Lori. Hey.
I have a comment and a question. I'm really tired of them harassing this president and wasting our taxpayers' money. Is there any way the people can take those liberals to court to get all that stopped?
You know,
it's not like we haven't gone to court. I mean, those three Supreme Court cases were because we took action against the House of Representatives and won because we thought their subpoenas were overreached. And we had the New York AG, the New York DA. We got at least the ability to go back into court and fight that out. We didn't get everything we wanted in that one, but in two of the three, we did exactly that. And in the Supreme Court the other day did not expedite that case on the request of the House. But the election is going to determine the next course of this. And this idea that they're threatening now to hold this president in to some kind of proceedings again to have him impeached because he gets elected. I mean, think about that for a moment. I mean, the American people should be rejecting that out of hand.
You know, folks, we're going to continue to take your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. We come back to, what can be done about, one, on the education side federally. I want to get an update on the stimulus talks as well, the negotiations going on in Congress, because there is some funding that could be available to schools there as well in the billions of dollars. So we'll talk to Than about that. And whether or not that legislation will be able to move forward. But let me encourage you, if you've got calls too about these newly uncovered documents about this Russian hoax, give us a call, 1-800-684-3110, or your current situation with school, 1-800-684-3110. And a reminder, great time to support the work of the ACLJ. Matching challenge is how we do all of our services at no cost to our clients. Donate aclj.org.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We are taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. Let me start off with this, just if you're just joining us. The Senate Judiciary Committee has declassified documents. I'm holding in my hand for our Facebook and Periscope audience. It came from the Department of Justice, from the Office of Legislative Affairs, to Chairman Lindsey Graham of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Marco Rubio, Mark Warner, and Dianne Feinstein, with these newly declassified documents. And what these declassified documents show is, one, who Christopher Steele's sources were. One was this, it's unnamed at this time, but they've described a Russian-speaking individual who Christopher Steele knew, who had sub sources. Now, Christopher Steele, we're also learning a lot more because he's on trial right now in the United Kingdom for defamation, which, by the way, is a lot different than being on trial for defamation in the U.S. A lot easier to get found guilty in the U.K. for defamation because they don't have the same kind of freedom of speech laws we have in the United States. But we know, Dad, that there are these six sub-sources, and that the primary source for Christopher Steele said, take it all with a grain of salt. These were conversations, and these are quotes, conversations I was having with my friends over beers. And then we have Peter Strzok saying, you know, directly that he didn't believe that any of this was actually correct. You know, he goes on to say, the recent interviews and investigation reveal Steele may not be in a position to judge the reliability of his subsource network, and that we do not know, nor can we figure out what any of this means or where it might be coming from. That's the FBI. Can't figure out what any of it means or where it might be coming from. And the guy who's giving Christopher Steele the info says, basically, it's hearsay. Basically, it's made up. Basically, take it with a grain of salt. It's just friends talking. I never thought it'd be used as some kind of legal document to try and get warrants on people. And yet, that's exactly what the FBI did, knowing that it couldn't be trusted.
I mean, just think about this for a moment. That whole Russia investigation started, and they all knew, not only was it not true, it shouldn't be trusted, but the conversations took place over a couple of, what did Steele say, a couple of beers between friends, and then others saying, I never thought it would go this far. Well, it went far. It went to an impeachment proceeding against the sitting president of the United States and to a special counsel report. Now, we won both, which is good, but the fact that the American people and this president had to go through this is outrageous. And then for Adam Schiff, who I spent 3 weeks on the floor of the Senate with, he's already saying, no matter what happens, if he gets elected, we're bringing impeachment proceedings. Based on what, by the way? You're going to call Christopher Steele as your first witness, chairmanship. Call Christopher Steele as your first witness.
You know, what's interesting, too, is when you look at the media coverage and why President Trump uses fake news so much, Politico is now reporting that the documents released suggest that even as press reports like the one we talked about from the New York Times in 2017 began to describe as fact connections between Americans in Trump's orbit and figures in Russia's shadowy intelligence services, the FBI had gathered little, if any, evidence that such ties existed. Real clear investigations. From the FBI interviews, it becomes clear that the primary subsource and his friends peddled warmed over rumors and laughable gossip that Steele dressed up as formal intelligence memos. But Dad, places like Politico and the Washington Post and the New York Times, those weren't their headlines in 2017.
No, they were not. And you know, now they're reporting it because they have to, because the documents have come out. What they should all be doing is saying, look, this was all wrong in the beginning. We knew it was wrong. I wonder if CNN's covering this tonight. I doubt it. I wonder if MSC is going to even touch it tonight. I doubt it. Why? Because it goes against the narrative. But it's the narrative we knew all along that this was wrong. And by the way, when we're looking at these other forms of government abuse outside of the realm of the president, when we're doing these FOIA requests, we're telling, you've seen it. The information we're finding, the anti-Israel bias, for instance, inside the Department of State under the previous administration, and the information we found because of this FOIA litigation in federal court, your support of the ACLJ makes all of that possible.
Folks, donate online right now at aclj.org. We have a matching challenge the entire month of July. That means for every donation that comes in, a donor will match that. So you double the impact of your donation, tax deductible, aclj.org.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. My dad's joining us as well. Jay Sekulow, Than Bennett, Washington, D.C. Start taking your phone calls and your comments as well, coming in on Facebook and Periscope in just a moment. I want to go to Facebook first because Julie on Facebook wrote in, "Dad, I think this is very important for you. Now that we know this isn't true, what will we do with this knowledge going forward?" I think that she means, like, what will we do? What will the president's legal team do? What will the Senate do? What will the Department of Justice and the FBI do?
Well, I expect if there was culpability and criminal wrongdoing, what the Department of Justice will do is seek indictments of those individuals that violated the federal criminal law. So that's number one. Number two, there's going to be a top-to-bottom review of this whole process, and there's already been procedures put in place so that politically biased, especially during election season, FBI investigations can't just go without serious oversight, including oversight by the Attorney General of the United States. Number three, I think that, look, I mean, I think individuals that were wronged by the FBI, and we don't represent them, because we represented the president, but individuals that were wrong could take causes of actions against various government agencies for misuse of office, abuse of power. And also, I think look, the reality is that what happens here is the system failed. And when a system fails, you have to go forward and figure out what is the next thing I'm going to do. How do we correct this from happening? And I think that's what I'll go to Than on this. But Than, that's what Lindsey Graham's looking at right now.
That's what Lindsey Graham's looking at. And Jay, honestly, it's a lot of our previous work, the work we've already done, has laid the foundation for. And let me just give one small example. I mean, imagine being Peter Strzok today. You and Jordan have laid out the direct evidence of him saying that there was no evidence of individuals affiliated with the Trump team in contact with Russians, and that they are unaware of any Trump advisors engaging in conversation with Russian intelligence officials. Jay, essentially what he's saying there is plainly there's no there, which we had already heard from in minute text. But Jay, the previous work that we and others have done have shown what Peter Strzok actually did. Despite knowing that there was no there, I'm holding a document from July 31st, 2016, opening Crossfire Hurricane, Peter Strzok's signature. I'm also holding a document responding to the January 4th, 2017 Washington Field Office memo recommending the closing of Crossfire Razor. Peter Strzok overturned that. So imagine, Jay, with those documents being out in the public because of the work that's already been done, and now the new information that's been released today, imagine being Peter Strzok, or maybe this, Jay, imagine being his attorney today.
I think his. I don't think Peter Strzok will be appearing before a Senate committee if I was his lawyer. I don't think I'd let many of these people testify if I had the option. But that'll be for their individual lawyers to make. And, you know, look, I mean, the way the Fifth Amendment works, I've said it before, I'll say it again, innocent people take the Fifth Amendment. I mean, it's designed to protect you from abuse. As well as protect you from self-incrimination. That's the whole idea of the Fifth Amendment. So interesting that it's all happening today. Most fascinating, of course, is we knew this was a fraud from the beginning, and this is just day by day, drip by drip, confirming that.
I mean, listen to this. This is scary as Americans. This is released in this newly declassified document that the Senate Judiciary Committee and Chairman Graham have provided. The document also raises questions as to whether the FBI was properly using intelligence techniques and databases, quote, throughout the summer, considering that the earliest formal investigation of a U.S. person associated with the Trump campaign, that would have been Carter Page, that wasn't officially opened until July 31st of 2016. And yet the document raises questions, and it looks like that the FBI was already using intelligence techniques that they didn't have the authority to do because, one, there was an investigation open, two, they hadn't gotten FISA warrants, and it was happening even before July 31st, Dad.
So John Durham is investigating all of this to determine exactly what happened. So the American people, all of us, are not going to be held in suspense that much longer. We're going to know what happens here. I suspect if there's indictments, they will be called what are called speaking indictments. They are indictments that will lay out what happened, lay out the case. And maybe there is a supplemental report as well. I don't know that. But I will tell you this. We're going to find out that at the highest levels, there was misdeeds, breaking of the law, federal law, committing of crimes, I believe, on a pretty significant level. And some witnesses are cooperating. When you've got cooperating witnesses, that also makes a big difference here. And you have that. So look, I have been saying this for 4 years since I began representing this president. I said it in the floor of the Senate. I have said it to Bob Mueller himself, and I said it to the Supreme Court of the United States. This was harassment of a sitting president of the United States with no legal basis, in fact, violations of the law while they were doing it.
Folks, we are going to continue to take your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. We take most of those in the next segment, but I want to take this Facebook comment, and then I'm going to go right to Lori's call in California. But Dad, Ruth on Facebook, she wrote in, how did Bob Mueller not look at all of this?
Because in my view, Bob Mueller was absent without leave, and he was a soldier, and he served his country admirably and as a soldier during Vietnam, and for that we're all grateful. But I think in this proceeding, Bob Mueller was absent. He was not reviewing the data. You saw that when he testified. I think that what he allowed to take place under his watch with Peter Strzok and Lisa Page and all of the misinformation, the lies, the cover-up, the destruction of evidence, and his response to that was why I ultimately fired them. Whatever happened to those phones that were wiped out? What happened to that evidence? But they went after everybody else's records. So that kind of tells you where they're at. These were bad actors. And Bob Mueller allowed the bad actors to be bad actors. So he is responsible. Ultimately, it was him. It was Robert Mueller. And I think he owes the country an apology. And I think when this comes out, he's going to find that out. I wonder what his, you know, he's writing these op-eds right now. It's going to be very interesting what he says. He's going to say when a very well-respected U.S. attorney who served in both Republican and Democrat administrations comes out with either indictments or an indictment and indictments and a report or whatever it might be. Wonder what Bob Mueller's going to say then.
I don't think Bob Mueller wrote a word of that op-ed. In fact, I think if he was called to testify about it, it'd be just as bad as when he was testifying about his supposed report that he had never read and had to have an assistant go through it. He still could not get the words out clearly. It was clearly written by his those who have kind of taken over Bob Mueller with Weissman and Zelensky. And now, you know, we've got people like Andrew Weissman. They're fundraising for Joe Biden. And they are, of course, going to release books right before the election on September 29th. And Weissman's book is Where Law Ends, Inside the Mueller Investigation. I mean, Dad, Where Law Ends, Inside the Mueller Investigation is they didn't find anything to prosecute when it came to the Russia investigation. So that's where the law ends.
Yeah, the law ends. The problem is these guys were making up the law as it was going along. But the law ended in their report, which A, concluded what? No Russia collusion. B, we couldn't make a decision on difficult questions of law and facts, so we're not going to decide obstruction. The Department of Justice reviewed those laws and facts and determined there was no violation, which was the right call. But the fact of the matter is, where does the law end? It ended in their report. It ended. It should have ended before it started, because they all knew it was a fraud.
All right, let me go to Laura.
I'd like to ask that to Andrew Weissman. Yeah. Did you know all of this, Andrew Weissman, and you allowed it to go forward?
Yeah,
I'd like an answer to that question.
That's Ruth's question. You know, how did they, when she says Robert Mueller, I think she means to that whole team with all the time
they
spent.
Of course they knew.
Yeah, they knew it.
Of course they knew.
They concealed it. They knew it just like Peter Strzok knew it and wrote about it, and yet they moved forward because of their hatred of President Trump. They have Trump derangement syndrome. They were on a witch hunt to try and take down a president and make him a one-term president and do anything possible, and even try to get him impeached. And he was by the House, but he was acquitted by the Senate. I do want to take Lori's call from California. We're going to keep talking about all these issues, too, in our final segment of the broadcast coming up. So keep calling 1-800-684-3110. Lori, thanks for holding on. Welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, team. I called Monday, and so I'm calling again today. I wanted to let you know what's going on here in California. We serve kids in our school system that were in 50% poverty before COVID, and we would deliver deliver canned foods and such to the schools. Yep. And then the schools closed down, and we were unable to do that. So there's two situations here. The first situation is we've had to, like, now as volunteers go to their homes to deliver. Before, we were delivering to the schools on Friday when they were in schools. And now our secondary issue is that we were keeping all the food in our churches, and now we can't because our churches are closed down. So I just
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to tell you, this is what I was going to tell you. This is exactly where we want to help, because what we have to do there is figure out what is the best way for you to get that food, which is one of the things I am most concerned about. The food getting to the kids. Two meals a day usually at school, and for a lot of these kids, that's the two main meals of the day they get. So we have to be creative. We've got to work with school boards. Maybe the bus drivers still do their route, socially distanced, but deliver the food if they're not picking up the kids. But that's the kind of thing our lawyers can talk to school boards about and say, hey, here's an idea. Let's try this.
That is one of our action items, too. You will see it, the blog we posted, which shows you kind of our strategy for how to move forward with this at ACLJ.org. And one of those is food, specifically the meals that the children receive. Usually it's at least one, possibly two, and sometimes that's the only food they get each day. So go to ACLJ.org, check that out. Donate if you can at ACLJ.org.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
You know, we do in the final segment of Jay Sekulow Live, we take your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110, and we go in the order of those who have been holding on. So we're going to start with Steve in North Carolina online, too. Steve, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hey, Jordan. Thanks for having me, man.
Thanks, Steve.
Hey, quick comment. Wanted to see, I know somebody else has already said this, but wanted to just see what, moving forward, what can be done with these people, Schiff and all these guys. How can they still be allowed to pursue more impeachment things after all this has proven to be nothing? I mean, look, if I'm a real estate agent and I sell you a house for $1 million and you pull up to the property and it's actually a doghouse that's 4 feet by 5 feet and I have deceived you, then I shouldn't be allowed to be a real estate agent anymore, right? I mean, What can we do from here forward? For instance, Sherry Fink, one of the writers for the godless newspaper, the New York Times, on May 18th, talked about coronavirus cases, worst-case scenario, that 28 million people could die in this country. And I remember reading it. A day and a half, 2 days later, the stock market crashes. It's a direct result of somebody's comments and writings.
Let me jump in here. Let me jump in, Dave, because we're short on time. Look, I mean, elections have consequences. Adam Schiff gets elected, and if the Democrats control the House of Representatives and they make him the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, guess what he is? He's the chairman of the Judiciary Committee. Now, you got to beat him then if they bring an impeachment proceeding and you lose in the House again, and you got to fight it out again in the United States Senate. Hard for me to believe they would do it. But I paid nothing for chance, so we'll be prepared if we have to do it. I don't think they'll do it.
Jordan. Adam Schiff says they're going to do it even if President Trump doesn't win. He just said this 2 days ago. Take a listen.
Up until November, I think exposure of wrongdoing. After the election, after he's gone, then I think we have to continue to expose what he did while he was in office because, of course, the administration has stonewalled us in every way it can. It has stonewalled every subpoena, every request for information. So there's a lot more evidence of the president's wrongdoing that is being withheld and will be withheld as long as he's in office.
Let me tell you something about stonewalling on subpoenas. They went to the Supreme Court, too, and they lost. And they continue, not just at the Supreme Court. They have lost at the district. Of course, they've lost at the Court of Appeals. So, you know, they could say stonewalling, but we're applying the Constitution. And related to the United States Congress, we won both cases. The court said that they did not have a basis at that time. It was vacated, had to go back down to the lower court. They didn't apply the right standards for those subpoenas. And there have been other subpoenas where they just flat out said they're not enforceable and they haven't moved forward. So I know these are threats. We'll investigate the administration. And you know what? I don't think that would happen. I take nothing for granted. But if they think they're going to win are they going to win the election based on that? Is that you're more the political one than I am, Jordan, but that doesn't seem to be a winning strategy to me.
It never is. It never is a winning strategy. Will they do everything possible to try to win? So is that the Adam Schiff approach? Yes. So they'll do anything to pick off any votes. But the winning strategy is, what is your plan for the next 4 years? What's your plan for the economy? And in this election, of course, foreign policy always important. I think foreign policy ties also directly to the second and maybe number one issue because it's so tied together. COVID is so tied together with the economy and with foreign policy. So I think that's where you win the election. And of course, you have to be get your voters out. You have to campaign. And you have to be able to put two sentences together. And Joe Biden has had a tough time doing that. I look at these polls, and if really Joe Biden was doing as well as they kind of talk about, he'd be blowing, it'd be a lot more than 5-6 points. Those are the same poll numbers that Hillary Clinton had, and she was blown out by President Trump. Now, I take nothing for granted. I think it will be a closer election because of COVID especially and because of the ways people are voting. But I look at these poll numbers. I started looking at them yesterday, and I said, and we're still really early, pre-Labor Day, that, I mean, Hillary Clinton was doing a lot better than this against Donald Trump. And look how that turned out for the former Secretary of State. Let's go back to the phones. Nancy in California on line 5. Nancy, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. Nancy, you're on the air.
She's not.
All right, Nancy's not there. So let's go to Gail in Texas on line 6. Gail, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. Gail dropped as well. So let's try Paul in Indiana.
Paula,
on line 1.
Yes. Hi.
Hey, three times the charm. There you go.
Well, wanted to let you know I'm a special education teacher in Indiana who wants to be back in the classroom. I'm also a parent who wants her children back in the classroom. And we're fighting the ISTA, who is actually trying to close our schools and keep us from being able to go back to the classroom.
Yeah. So look, I mean, here's the thing. Well, go ahead and finish. Please go ahead and finish.
Well, and what's difficult is because our hands are kind of tied as educators, I'd love nothing more than to be able to provide services to students outside of the school. But that makes it very difficult with funding and parents being able to then be able to finance that.
Yeah, so that's why we want to be able to go to, no one's going to be able to compel your school district to open. That's going to be not something we're going to be able to do. But you raise the point. What about, because I know this is happening in other places where parents go into the teacher saying, well, you may not be able to go to the classroom or you may not be able to do this, but what if we had 5 or 6 of the parents got together and hired you? And that's what we're saying to the school district. Hey, in a situation like this where teachers are not going to be utilized at the same level or you're not having to run the school at the same expense, why not reallocate some of those resources to help the parents meet the, because not everybody has the resources to do it, so that they can hire a teacher like Paula for maybe 10 students, meet in a safe environment, but obviously won't be the school, and be creative. What we're trying to tell these school boards with the over 1,000 requests we've received is be creative here. We're dealing with something that we've never dealt with in our lifetime, a pandemic like this. So let's be creative to meet the needs of the kids.
Let me go to Nancy in California. And by the way, if you feel like you're in that situation, again, aclj.org/help. We're talking later today with someone I was on television with on Fox News from the Cato Institute and from Reason Magazine. And we're going to have our legal team actually talk to him because they do so much work. And he talked about the little red schoolhouse issue right after I was on, and about how states like Oregon, which completely shut down charter schools, even virtual learning by charter schools, California shutting down charter schools by not providing funding, same thing going on in Pennsylvania. So we're having our legal team talk to him about kind of what they are seeing happening around the country literally right after we get off the air today. Let's go to Nancy, though, in California, line 2, final call of the day. Hey, Nancy.
Hi, gentlemen. So in California, all the churches are now closed. We can't even have church in our parking lots. But this is all about the money. The fairgrounds, people can rent out space at the fairgrounds. They're holding concerts there. They're playing movies there. You're supposed to sit in chairs outside of your car. Churches can now rent the fairgrounds. It's all about the money. We can't have church in our own parking lot.
There's not a statewide closure on churches in California. There are counties where there is, and there may be more of those coming. But again, that's why we've got it set up, Jordan. We're litigating that right now in California on some of this. We'll continue to protect religious liberty.
We're actually, and who we're talking to, too, with Corey DeAngelis, too, from Cato, he just sent me that in 2 school districts in Arizona, public schools, they're going to charge parents extra to return. They're going to actually charge you extra on top of the tax dollars you pay.
See, this is nonsense.
So we're going to talk about that.
That's totally wrong.
We're going to talk about that with our legal team when we get back. Support the work of the ACLJ, matching challenge, donate online, aclj.org. Talk.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's matching challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.